Have you enjoyed the film?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to you for about 10, 15 minutes just to give you some of my background that I personally witnessed in the service. After that, we're going to have plenty of time for questions. And obviously, anybody can ask any question they like, and unlike the 9/11 Commission, we will try and answer them. So where do you start with 10 minutes to talk about all the crimes against humanity of the intelligence services? Well, I said it's like the Monty Python sketch where you've got to summarise Marcel Proust, Ellery Safety, Tom Perdue, a 3,000 page novel in about 10 seconds. So there you go. I left the services because I was briefed on a plot in which MI6 funded Al-Qaeda to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars in 1996. I joined the services to stop terrorism, not become a part of it. So anybody here who doubts that our governments would fund terrorist organisations can ask me about it, because I personally witnessed it. In September 1995, my opposite number in MI6, a guy called David Watson, came to me and said there'd been a walk-in to the British Embassy in Tunis. A walk-in's a volunteer. This man, who they codenamed Tunworth, was a senior member of Libyan intelligence, who actually admitted to David Watson that he was leading a group of Libyan Islamic extremist terrorists. He had a plan. He gathered together this group. He had a plan to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi and take power with his cabal in Libya. Now this caused me several concerns, because by this point, of course, the Americans were telling us that Islamic terrorists were responsible for the 1993 attack on the World Trade Center. MI5 had set up a section called G9C specifically to deal with this new threat. So they couldn't say they didn't know what they were doing. MI6 decided to fund this guy. Well, I'm not sure exactly how much money it was, but he certainly confessed to paying at least $40,000 to him. This $40,000 was used to buy jeeps, to buy equipment, to buy the most basic supplies for his group. In December 1995, MI6 issued a document to Whitehall. Obviously, they didn't confess to the fact they were paying money to this group, because politicians would have known through other intelligence reports that Islamic extremists posed an enormous threat to lives in the West. Of course, by this time, Colonel Gaddafi, who had been responsible for terrorist attacks in this country, had renounced terrorism. He was opening diplomatic channels with the British government to try and come back into the diplomatic fold. So it makes no logical sense whatsoever to pay people who pose a direct threat to British lives money to bump off someone who no longer poses a threat to British lives. This report did, though, crucially confirm that Islamic extremist terrorists were involved in the plot. It outlined the details of the plot. It confirmed that the MI6 agent wasn't just reporting on the plot, this guy Tunworth was part of it. He was a leader of a group of conspirators. At the time, I thought it was a lot of boys' own stuff. MI6 likes to play up to the role of James Bond. They love swanning, I'm thinking they're swanning around Monte Carlo casinos, drinking martini shaken, not stirred. In fact, in real life, they spend a lot of time getting tedious embassy receptions, drinking warm plonk. But I thought they stopped playing up to the role. So my first reaction was to be sceptical. I thought it was a half-assed plan, basically. However, in March 1996, I received intelligence reports from separate sources, from sources quoting the Egyptian and Moroccan services, who both described an attack on Gaddafi's life. The attack that they described was exactly like the attack that the agent Tunworth had proposed in this MI6 report. They had in fact attacked a cavalcade of cars, but unfortunately they had put the bomb of the grenade on the wrong car. And this would be laughable if it wasn't for the fact that innocent people died. And there's no excuse for this. People in the British press, some of these right-wing commentators, tried to pretend even if this operation had happened, it was somehow acceptable that innocent Libyans should die, that they should be collateral damage in an MI6 attack. I don't believe that for a second. I believe that is the beginning of totalitarianism. Anyway, when I tackled David Watson about this, he told me, yes, that was our man, we did it. It said that to point out to him that they had actually killed Colonel Gaddafi, which was the objective of the operation. Now at the time, I just thought this was MI6 being off-hand, not thinking things through properly. But obviously, in the light of what we now know about the invasion of Iraq and the invasion of Afghanistan and how 9/11 was used to justify those invasions so that the US could either control the gas pipeline in Afghanistan or the oil industry in Iraq, I believe this was the first attempt to do that. If Tonworth had succeeded, we would have had the first Al-Qaeda state in Libya. Libya, of course, is not a stable country at the best of times, but it does have enormous oil reserves. The neighbouring countries, Sudan, Tunisia, Algeria, Egypt, all have their own problems with Islamic extremist terrorists. This would have been the excuse, of course, for the UK and US to invade North Africa and take control of the oil supply in Libya and possibly in another neighbouring state like Sudan. That's what I now believe. However, I tried to raise this, and this gives you an idea of what happens in this country. You remember, this was in 1996, on the record it was 97. I raised this issue directly with governments through a legal channel set up. So I was operating respectably and using the legal channels available to me. I thought the Blair government, which of course had been elected a year before on a platform of human rights, freedom of information, and crucially, of course, an ethical foreign policy, would actually hear what I had to say, would recognise that MI6 funding our terrorist enemies and murdering innocent people, crucially, of course, without the permission of governments, because Malcolm Rifkin has now admitted he gave no permission to such a plot, and that is, of course, illegal under the 1994 Intelligence Services Act. The real James Bond do have a licence to kill, but they have to have permission of the Foreign Secretary, so at least somebody somewhere is accountable. When I present this information to government, I was thrown in prison in France with a view to extradition. They then leaked stories to the press saying they'd thrown me in prison because they thought I was going to start releasing intelligence information, even though I'd given them this information and asked them to investigate it. Robin Cook, of course, went on the Breakfast with Frost program a couple of days later when I was in prison and claimed the whole thing was pure fantasy with no basis in fact. That might have been that. In Britain we have no way of getting access to intelligence information. Our elected representatives in Parliament, if they start asking difficult questions, are told to shut up, or are briefed against in the press and so on. But fortunately, a public-spirited individual put the MI6 document that I was talking about on the internet. Crucially, because this document was dated the 5th of December 1995, it predated the attack. It therefore showed inside knowledge. It wasn't somebody reporting on something that had happened. It also, as I said, crucially confirmed that the MI6 agent himself was involved. Now you think, at this point, perhaps the Home Secretary the Foreign Secretary revised his opinion. This was pure fantasy with no basis in fact. This, after all, was the basis in fact of what I was saying. Unfortunately, he didn't, and to this day, the Foreign Office will still tell you the whole thing was in fact pure fantasy. Fortunately, I was actually released from prison by the French, who refused my extradition because it was so manifestly political. It was not motivated to see justice done, it was motivated by shutting me up, by putting me in prison. Since then, investigations by the BBC, by the Mail on Sunday newspaper, have confirmed the existence of this operation, have confirmed that there was no government permission. So that shows you very clearly that our government behind our backs, or not even our government, our intelligence services behind our backs, are prepared to risk our lives and carry out operations in which innocent people die. I have witnessed this. I am not reporting it from other people. But I also know another case in which another intelligence service carried out an attack. In fact, in this case, on its own embassy. In July 1994, the Israeli embassy in London was bombed. Would you believe, in fact, that MI5 had been warned of this attack by one of its agents in a few weeks before the attack? The officer who got the report, who didn't react in time, didn't tell the Israelis about this, or indeed the police or anybody else so they could put up extra security, then claimed that she'd given the report to somebody else. Now, MI5, of course, had a document audit system. It hadn't been put through the audit system. She just simply failed to act upon it. And that is bad enough. When I was reading in MI5 about what they'd been doing to investigate who was responsible for these attacks, I also discovered that a very senior officer who looked at the investigation, based from an MI5 point of view in terms of intelligence, and a police point of view in terms of evidence, but concluded that the Israelis themselves had attacked their own embassy.
Surely not.
Now people would think, why would the Israelis attack their own embassy? A few months beforehand, a Jewish interest section in Buenos Aires had been attacked and many innocent people had died. They since then have been lobbying the British government for more security around their embassy. The British government had quite rightly pointed out to them that the Palestinians who live in London do not carry out terrorist attacks. They come here because we give them a safe haven and want to get on with their lives. They may become involved in politics, but that's a different matter. Now this has again seemed outlandish, but there was other information that tied in with this. Strangely enough, the Israeli embassy, that of course is on high alert because they are saying they're going to be attacked, the camera that is supposed to record the car that brings in the bomb is not working that day. The one camera on the embassy that's not working on the one day of the year when somebody drives a bomb in. The three senior members of the Israeli embassy were not there that day. Now, I don't know about you, but if Mossad were planning a so-called controlled explosion, and given their record for cocking things up, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near the scene. And also, of course, there were crucially no injuries, even though a bomb had gone off. You'd expect at least some people to have been injured by flying glass and so on. So there's other clear evidence to indicate that it was Mossad just from the forensics. There were problems though with the forensics as well, because the Israelis helped sweep the site. This meant they could take away any trace of Mossad involvement. And in fact, no traces of the actual explosive used were in fact found. That would either suggest they were taken away, or they were made by an organisation that was so professional that it could create a bomb that would destroy its own traces. That kind of knowledge is beyond the knowledge of terrorists. It is of course well known to armies and intelligence services across the world. But more peculiarly was the arrest of two Palestinians. They were arrested, Samar Alami and Jawed Botmeh were arrested for conspiracy to cause these explosions. They had alibis for the day of the attack. They were put on trial, and the prosecution unfolded a load of circumstantial evidence. But crucially, someone who couldn't be found was someone called Raida Megrabi, who had encouraged these two people to be in certain places at certain times. In fact, they believed that it was this Raida Megrabi's signature which was on the papers that belonged to the car that was used to drive the bombing. Although Jawed Botmeh had gone in with him to the auction, he was well known in the Palestinian community as someone who could check out cars to see whether they were dodgy or not. So this agent provocateur took him along there. Worse still, this agent provocateur simply disappeared. But when Samar and Joanne had been arrested, they were held incommunicado, of course, as people are before trials. They were independently able to describe this man and draw a picture of him, two pictures which looked exactly the same. So it is clear from this, of course, that Mossad bombed their own embassy. Again, if anyone has any doubts about these things going on, this is the clear proof. Not just my word, the word of a senior MI5 officer. However, of course, this material, the original intelligence report that was mislaid, and the MI5 officer's findings were withheld from the jury that heard the evidence at trial. Now, of course, the standard in this country for a criminal trial is beyond reasonable doubt. You don't have to prove you're innocent, they have to prove you did it. And that, I would contend, would create reasonable doubts in the mind of any jury member, because all the other evidence is circumstantial. There are no explosive traces on the two, and so on. And yet, they're allowed to be convicted. Of course, the jury didn't know about the stuff I'm talking about, but by this time, of course, I've blown the whistle. I was able to give a sworn statement to Gareth Pearce. You've probably heard of Gareth Pearce. He was the lawyer played by Emma Thompson in The Name of the Father in the film about the Guildford Four. He's a tireless campaigner for victims of miscarriages of justice. So I gave sworn statements around these two documents, which were submitted to the appeal court for the appeal of the two. Under English law, of course, if new evidence emerges, a conviction should be quashed and returned to the original trial judge, because he is the only person who sees all the evidence. In fact, in this case, the appeal judges simply failed to follow that case law. They upheld the convictions. So it's not a case, they say, that the intelligence services will cover up their involvement, or the cover up of so-called friendly services, in terrorist attacks where they carry out the terrorist attacks themselves. Now beyond that, there's other stuff that is prior to 9/11, but stuff that again is a matter of public record. In the 1960s, there was something called Operation Northwoods in 1962, in which the CIA had submitted plans to an American president to bomb an American airliner over Cuban airspace and blame the Cubans.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to have a dummy plane, they're going to have passenger lists to try and create anger amongst the American people to encourage an invasion of Cuba. There was a similar plan to blow up a US warship in Guantanamo Bay. And again, this would have led to the loss of real American lives, American soldiers. This again demonstrates they are prepared to sacrifice their own citizens in order to invade other countries that they don't like. Now, President Kennedy, of course, vetoed these plans, but they are, again, a matter of public record. This is not conspiracy theory. This has been released under the Freedom of Information Act. I could go on and on about these kind of issues, but I just want to give you a flavour of what I have witnessed personally and what is in the public domain. If anyone has questions, I'm very glad to answer them.
David, can I just intervene immediately?
Yeah.
Do you want to manage your own questions here? Because you seem to be doing a good job of it.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't have a question.
Okay, but you decide who speaks. You're the chair as well as the speaker. Is that okay with everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. On you go.
Okay, gentlemen,
hi, Dave. Thank you very much for coming to talk to us about this. You know, it seems very bright thing to do, considering who we're up against. But would you, I know this is not directly into 9/11, but do you have any feedback and comments about what happened in London?
Yeah.
And what the signatures of those attacks?
Yeah, there's lots of unanswered questions about 7/7. Yeah. I don't want to put forward conspiracy theories because...
Is there anything that you know?
Yeah, well, I've seen the investigations that have been done. There are two crucial questions. One is are there no reliable eyewitness reports about Muslim suicide bombers on these tubes, on these buses? You'd expect people coming out who survived the attacks to say that. Yet none of them say that. The original people who were there talked to Mark Onyx, one of the Guardian, that day, and he publishes a report that says people talked about a bomb under the tube. Bruce Lake gave an interview to the Cambridge Evening News, and he said, he was at Aldgate East, he said when he came round, he saw metal pushing up into the tube. That would indicate that the bomb had been placed under the tube. Again, these are unanswered questions. I don't want to put forward any theories, I want to stick to the facts of this. And a bit like 9/11, we've had a massive terrorist attack by our standards, and our government again is telling us that there will not be an inquiry into the circumstances of this attack. There are other suspicious issues. Someone who was initially fingered as the mastermind of the attack, Harun Rashid Azwat, who they claimed had been arrested in Pakistan, was the mastermind, then they let go, then they denied he'd been arrested, they claimed he'd been arrested elsewhere as well. He's been reported in American mainstream media to be an MI6 agent. So again, we have to ask the question, why do we have an MI6 agent that at one point they're reporting as the mastermind, and the next minute they're covering up? They're saying we can't get the truth of these matters unless there's an inquiry where independent investigators can ask these difficult questions. But I'm also perplexed by some other things as well. The CCTV coverage that day is supposed to record the four bombers at Luton, and then they're recorded again at King's Cross at 8:26. The King's Cross film has never been released, the Luton one has. However, the only train that they could have got to be in King's Cross at that time from Luton was at 7:40. It was cancelled. The Network Rail has admitted this. They keep the records, of course, their performance indicator. So again, the official story simply cannot be right if there was no train for them to catch and be in London at that time. But beyond that, of course, the former counter-terrorist officer had even greater suspicions. Why are there no more CCTV coverage of these people? We know that London is one of the most surveyed cities in the world. You've only got to go to a tube station, walk onto a platform, walk down the street, and you're caught on more than one camera. And yet, they're claiming only to have two pictures of these guys. So we have to ask, where is the rest of CCTV coverage? And again, a bit like 9/11, there was a training exercise on the 7th of the 7th. I was going into London to give interviews that day. People said, you must be mad. They said, well, no, it's very rare there's going to be a terrorist attack. We've already had four today. We're not going to have any more, basically. And I was listening to the radio on the way in, and the guy from a security firm, his name escapes me for the moment.
Peter Power
gives an interview in which he says they were going to run a training exercise talking about exactly the same scenario at about the same time at the same stations as where they actually happened. Now again, that strikes me as being enormously suspicious. The preparation for those attacks, of course, for those exercises, of course, could act as cover for real people putting bombs down. As I say, that would tie in with them being under the tubes.
Just like 9/11, isn't it?
Just like 9/11 again, yeah.
Peter Power was
born
ahead of the London Metropolitan Police Special Branch.
Sorry?
Peter Power was a former member of...
Yeah, that's right. He was a former... And all these private security firms have very close connections with the intelligence services.
Did you hear about... Benjamin Netanyahu?
Yeah, well, it's the other thing about warnings as well.
The Mossad voicing a report on the day about simultaneous bombs.
Yeah. Mossad are one of the organisations who have claimed to have given a warning to the British about this. That was then subsequently denied. But then the head of Mossad again said that he'd given a warning. Of course, the details were confused, but this is why, again, we need inquiry to get to the bottom of this. The Saudis have also said they gave a warning. And a bit, again, like 9/11, why did Charles Clark then get up in Parliament and say the British intelligence services had no prior intelligence of these attacks? That itself, to me, is suspicious. I have never known a case of there being a terrorist attack in London, and the Home Secretary actually admitting they had no prior information.
Why is the word Islam and religion being attached to the word terrorism by the media, whereas it's like Irish terrorists, they say it's Irish terrorists are not Christian terrorists?
It is a problem, I suppose, because I do think that there are people who will carry out terrorist attacks who are motivated by some incredibly distorted interpretation of the Quran. Those people certainly do exist. But as I try to say here, I try to recognise that those people are a tiny, tiny minority, and in many cases they have been encouraged and funded and trained by the British intelligence services. We all know, of course, the training of the Mujahideen when they were fighting the Soviets in Afghanistan. It was an attempt by the Americans to stop the Soviets setting up a secular state there. But there is even more convincing evidence than that in the 1990s, which I haven't got time to go into in detail, but I'd recommend anybody to read a book called The War on Terror by Nafees Ahmed, and he goes into extraordinary detail.
Yeah.
Extraordinary detail about these things. And it's just like Saddam Hussein. The reason that Saddam Hussein could invade Kuwait in 1991 was because he'd been funded and trained by the British and the Americans because he was fighting the Iranians. And you'd think we would learn, but just because someone's our enemy's enemy, it doesn't mean to say they're necessarily going to be our friend forever. So we are causing these problems in the world. In fact, you can blame British imperialism for most terrorist conflicts in the world because we have at some point had a hand in dividing up countries that we once occupied or countries in which we once held some kind of position of authority. Whether it's in Northern Ireland, whether it's in Palestine or Kashmir, we have divided these countries and created communities at war with each other. This is all a fault of British imperialism.
I agree with the Chester theory that we've just watched a film in which there were different theories were included in this film, which is fair enough. The first part of the film sort of shot because of the physical detail of the destruction of the building, it was actually a pre-planned explosion, a demolition by charges which had been placed in the building. In other words, in order to carry out physical demolition, you didn't need an aeroplane to fly into the building. Later in the film, we have to, part of that theory that Michael Moore has already publicised, that Bush and Cheney had direct link to Bin Laden, and somehow or other a lot of family money was involved, and that Bin Laden was an executor of this operation, although Bin Laden denied. And what the first part of the film was about was not what you're talking about, which is intelligence service, rogue operations, things out of control, things that were sort of acts of the secret state. We're talking about the people in the supreme positions of power in the United States in terms of oversaw. This is something on another dimension entirely. And this is why I think the suggestion that we've heard tonight is still shocking to everybody and is still difficult to take in, because this has always been a possibility in some people's minds, but generally it's not an acceptable thought. So I'll give you any comments on that.
Yeah, I mean, well, what the film couldn't go into, of course, was how certain elements of the FBI HQ actively stopped the investigation of Islamic suspects in the US in the run-up to 9/11. One of the actual hijackers, Khaled Aldemar, somebody actually had spotted this guy in New York and put in a plan to investigate him. FBI HQ quashed it. The FBI in Minnesota had received a report from flying schools saying that they knew that people, that they had suspicions about that they were learning to fly planes but not take off or land. The report is to the FBI. The FBI HQ again stopped the investigation. Crucially, of course, they were alerted to Zakhari Messaoui, who is now known, of course, as the 20th hijacker. Where the local FBI checked him out with the French. He was confirmed by French intelligence to be a terrorist, and yet FBI HQ would not apply for a warrant to access this man's computer. This beggars belief, and again I know as a former counter-terrorist officer how easy it is to get warrants in terrorist cases. The standard of evidence is much lower than that required for a criminal investigation because of the potential harm that can be caused by these people. And of course the FBI then said they knew nothing, and Colin Rowley, the FBI, blew the whistle on it. But there are other cases in Chicago, at least in Chicago certainly they were stopped again by the FBI HQ. So we have the elements of the FBI who appear to be stopping the people on the ground trying to do it. And of course David Shippers, who was formerly a counsel to a US kind of committee before 9/11, gave a warning to Robert Ashcroft, the Attorney General, about a month beforehand, in which he had talked to concerned FBI officers who had come to him and said their investigations had been stopped. They had clear evidence of the attack, including dates, times, locations, and Robert Ashcroft simply ignored it. And again, if anybody thinks this is conspiracy theory, he tried to give his evidence to the 9/11 Commission, and the 9/11 Commission just failed to take possession of that evidence, let alone even mention it.
Gentlemen,
They had an agent in place. They had declared as a trial that they had an agent in place on the attack of the 1993 World Trade Center. But rather cunningly, this agent actually recorded his conversations with the FBI rather than the other way around. And what crucially was established by this, that they had actually given them the know-how to create the bomb. And they had actually created the bomb that he had then given to the terrorists. This is a clear case of entrapment. How those people are convicted, I do not know. It would lead me to suspect the jury had been tampered with.
Given the general political climate in this country after 9/11, where state security and terrorism become almost seems to be a valid reason for doing anything, do you think it's possible that there could ever be a genuinely independent inquiry into something like the London bombings in this country?
Well, again, it's up to us. We don't live in, a democracy at all anymore, but we still at least have those kind of frameworks there, and there are enough of us gathering together like today. We have to act together, and we have to lobby our MPs, we have to lobby Parliament. Because I point out, if they can get away with things like 9/11 and 7/7, and use them as an excuse to curtail our liberties, to make us carry ID cards and put our data into data banks that can be accessed by the intelligence services so we can be blackmailed and everything else, we might as well forget democracy. So we have to stand up now and make sure that our calls for inquiry are heard, and that we just don't simply give up. Because in this country, I agree, it's difficult. I've tried to do this in my own case. You would think they would take evidence of MI6 funding our terrorist enemies and murdering innocent people without permission of government. But so far, that has not happened, despite the lobbying, despite the documentaries that have been made about my case. But we should not give up. And I think that if enough of us do this, they will be obliged to hold an inquiry in the same way they were obliged to hold an inquiry into 9/11 in the US. What we have to crucially make sure, of course, is that those inquiries are not like the inquiries into the war in Iraq and the September dossier, where you had stooges of the intelligence services like Michael Mates and Ann Taylor conducting inquiries into them and not asking the right questions.
I've been talking with quite a lot of activists, particularly in Oxford just recently, and I find that very many of them are really resistant they don't want to look at this. They keep talking about conspiracy theories, and it's so boring. It's always a conspiracy theory. And actually, I think that a lot of people are really afraid of what it means if we really go in on to the other side and see what really is happening, and that the whole thing, the whole bloody thing, is a sham. And I just wonder if you have something to say about that, because it seems to me that we have to act very, very quickly, because our rights are being taken away. These ID cards are coming in, the Patriot Act in America. A lot of people are very, very concerned that the Constitution has disappeared on the back of 9/11, and it's happening here. And I just wonder how we can get effectively organised and actually break through our own resistance and fear.
Yeah, well, this is the problem when you come up with this, because, and I have to admit that when I was following 9/11 in the mainstream media as a former kind of terrorist officer, I was concerned by certain things, and I kind of thought, well, yes, it's incompetence. And we can all look at incompetence and shrug our shoulders. But, of course, to go beyond that and to see the evidence, as we have seen on that cinema presentation, that, in fact, the American government were responsible for 9/11, to increase their ability to be able to invade other countries and so on, requires us to cross a mental Rubicon. And it is scary. Imagine, we have to think long and hard about this, because it upsets everything that we hold dear, our freedoms and the way that we control people who make decisions supposedly in our name. But that's not a reason to give up. I think that we have to say that in a democracy, the people are the heroes, the people ask intelligent questions. Our mainstream media has given up doing that. The BBC has been cowed by what happened as a result of the Hutton inquiry, even though 80% of the British people could see that for the whitewashing it was. So we have to be bold. And if people say to you, you're just a conspiracy theorist, and they get aggressive back. Say, you're a naive fool. Do you seriously think the people who run the American oil industry and the American arms industry are nice people? No, they're not. That's why they're so bloody rich. Because they're prepared to exploit innocent people who can't defend themselves. So let's throw the question back at them and accuse them of being naive fools if they get aggressive. Obviously, if you think they're going to engage me anyway, say, look, go look at this for yourself. It doesn't take long to read David Ray Griffin's The New Pearl Harbor, which is an excellent overview of this. His book on the 9/11 Commission, again, is an excellent overview. Give him the DVD. It takes an hour or two to watch it. I don't think there's anybody in the world who could watch those things and not at least come to our position and say there are questions that remain unanswered, that must be answered for the sake of democracy.
I'd just like to add something on that, a brief answer to what you said. People say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist in terms of 9/11. My normal return for that is, it's undoubtedly a conspiracy. You know, a group of people crashed a plane into a tower. What's that if not a conspiracy? It's only an issue of who the conspirator actually was. So, you know, that's my response. But my question is, it's really, I'd just like to know your opinion of exactly what you think how complicit the government actually are in all this, because you said earlier that MI5 don't necessarily tell the government about what's going on. And I'd just like to ask your opinion on how complicit you think they are in this, how much you think actually Tony Blair is involved in this, and if you think they are totally involved, why are they doing it?
I
don't know how involved Blair is. It's a difficult question to answer. I mean, certainly I know, as I say, the intelligence services do things behind the backs of government, the cabinet and parliament. It's very easy this country to do that, so there's no oversight of the services. And in some way they don't want the government to know, so when they are sent out to deny these things, like Robin Cook was, they can do it looking honest, basically. But I think the only way we can explain Blair's behaviour is that he is blackmailable by the intelligence services. I know that the intelligence services have files on most of the Labour government, because I saw some of the files when I was there. In fact, one of the things I want to tell you is that I didn't see this myself, must admit, but somebody who was reviewing Blair's file, this is when Blair was unknown, really, in 1992, not particularly well known, told me that Blair was an MI5 agent. In the 1980s, he reported on members of CND and the so-called Trotskyists in the Labour Party. Now, I've tried to get to the bottom of this, it's very difficult. But it would, in some ways, explain why he does what he does, basically, because he's actually a stooge, he's one of them, basically. But you imagine with all of these things, like with Straw leaked documents, secure documents in the 1970s when he was PPS to Barbara Castle, that was on his file. That's the kind of thing they can say to ministers, look, this will come out if you try and oppose us. But when I first wrote the record, somebody in government told us, not close to government, told us that in fact Jack Straw was very keen on hearing my evidence. It was shortly after that that his son was caught by a Daily Mirror journalist in a sting operation supposedly selling drugs. In those circumstances, what does the minister do? It's not even his own career, it's his family that get into trouble because they do these things. And until we have proper accountability of the intelligence services, they will carry on doing things like that. And we saw this, of course, in the September dossier with David Kelly. I don't for a second believe that David Kelly committed suicide. Doctors have written to newspapers saying you cannot commit suicide like that. I've been told by my contacts that he was in fact an MI6 agent. And I believe that MI6 or its surrogates would have killed him to keep him quiet because he knew too much about their operations and so on.
That's a good question. Are you sure it wasn't anything to do with the CIA? Because I've read newspapers, I've read files that are supposed to be declassified that basically state that the CIA allowed to kill him. I've read files that have been declassified that basically state that they work in each other's backyard, meaning that the CIA allowed to neutralise people in Britain, MI6, MI5 allowed to neutralise people in America, and Mossad have a free run of both countries.
Yeah, I certainly think that there is a very close relationship between the CIA, MI6, and between GCHQ and the NSA. And it is possible it happened, but I don't have any personal evidence of that, but I think it's perfectly feasible as an explanation for some of the illegal operations that do go on, basically.
Someone else.
Okay, it's not a subject now, but after 9/11, before the London bombings happened, we thought the biggest threat was the IRA, and then shortly after that you had the evacuation in Birmingham. And I'd like to get your personal opinion. Do you really think that outside of London, how much change do you think on, you know, the other cities such as Bristol and Cardiff, Liverpool, London, and Birmingham, etc., are in danger of terrorist attacks? Do you really think, because I work within the council, I know we have all this alert system go up, do you really think that there is a serious danger there? And
what's your
opinion on that?
The question is, there a serious danger? Is there a real danger from terrorists as well in this country? On one level there is, and beyond London, there is actually on one level, because MI5 knowingly let associates of Al-Qaeda, members of Al-Qaeda, into Britain in the 1990s. It was almost like a quid pro quo for a while, in which we gave safe haven to refugees of conflicts in the Middle East in return for them not carrying out attacks in this country. Now on 7/7 there are two theories, either that broke down, or 7/7 was an inside job carried out by the British intelligence services to push through all this new legislation that we're talking about. They have databases belonging to your ID card, so they'll know about your medical records, your financial records and everything else. And believe me, I know from my time in the services that they do illegally access information. MI5 routinely illegally access the DSS's databases and also people's private bank accounts. And they're actually those involved in trying to stop an investigation into a Guardian journalist. Now, of course, there are legal routes you can go through to get into somebody's bank account, and there may, of course, be legitimate reasons for that, for stopping genuine terrorists. But they didn't go through those procedures. They bypassed them. Somebody at MI5 and a mate in the bank who went to him and got all this Guardian's journalist financial information. Now, of course, financial information can tell you a hell of a lot about somebody's life. It can be even used to blackmail you if you're doing the wrong things, basically. So again, you know, if it is an inside job, they are doing it because they want to control us all, basically.
Fine. Back to intelligence services crashing each other's backs. I wondered if you might want to comment on some of the things in the War on Freedom, the book you were talking about, where it seems that Mossad may have had some direct hand in what happened in 9/11 when they caught some of these guys who seemed to be celebrating, and it turns out they were Mossad agents.
Yeah, I mean, this is very peculiar. I don't know if people know this particular story, but on the day of 9/11, some concerned American citizens, seeing people cheering as the planes went into the towers, reported them to the local police. They were arrested. They turned out to be Israeli citizens, and it's since been reported that they were members of Mossad. There have also again been reports that Jewish people who worked in the Twin Towers that day didn't go in. Crucially, I'm on the subject as well, someone called Robert O'Neill, who used to be an FBI officer, a very senior FBI officer, had left the FBI sometime before 9/11, and had gone to the French intelligence services and blown the whistle to them about American funding of Al-Qaeda. He was in the World Trade Center that day. So again, with these questions, we have to wonder why the 9/11 Commission does not answer any of these questions, does not even take the evidence to begin to evaluate it. And as that film made clear, of course, the person coordinating the investigations was Philip Zelikow, who is very, very close to the Bush administration.
Do you think that there's a way of separating or penetrating, because there's obviously a relationship between British and American intelligence and corporate money and corporate interests and oil, all of those things. So corporations, the money and the intelligence are linked, and they're not necessarily government politics, kind of like the political ideals of people who end up in government. But the media, who actually inform people and give people the power to think independently and to act in response to the things that they see, which, you know, after 9/11, I think, the majority of people, certainly in my world, didn't believe anything that they saw, but we've slowly been lulled into this complacency because it's been this ongoing sort of brainwashing and an onslaught by the media. How is it possible that the entire media, the free-thinking people who are idealistic about wanting to report and to contribute to a better world, how come nobody and how come no media money supports
there's not very much reporting in the mainstream media of the issues that we've seen today, and you would think if the media were doing their job, they would be reporting that. Not least, of course, because it would actually sell newspapers.
Absolutely.
And newspaper sales are plummeting at the moment. But I have to say, there's a very good reason for that. People in the US who work in the mainstream media who ask difficult questions, were sacked. Yeah. And I know in this country that the intelligence services have very close links, particularly to the press. In fact, our book exposes Con Coughlin and Dominic Lost in the Sunday Telegraph as direct MI6 agents of influence. That would mean that they would be given information by MI6, there would be no fact-checking would be going on, they would be virtually sitting there taking their shorthand, saying to MI6, how big do you want the headlines? And I do know the case, again, from when I was in the service, I was a personal witness to this, was that they libelled Colonel Gaddafi's son by planting false information about him. Because I knew about this, I was able to tell them this, and he sued for libel. And Dominic Lawson had to admit in his settlement that he had absolutely no evidence for what he had published about Gaddafi's son. That is the one case I know about. There's a section in MI6 called Information Operations, and its job is to plant stories in the media supposedly favourable to Britain. But of course, in the case of MI6, it's not favourable to Britain. They make no distinction between their own interests and British interests and the interests of democracy. So they use these stories to discredit their critics and to remove people as well. I say, if you've got the answer under control, you can stop people from asking difficult questions, from having their contracts renewed, or from being promoted within journalism. The journalists I have talked to don't bother checking facts. Very little fact checking goes on in Britain. I've been phoned by plenty of libel lawyers, but certainly not fact checkers. But it's very easy to create this illusion of investigative journalism, which in fact is a myth. So that is why the press do not tackle these issues. And also, of course, the press is controlled by big business. They get advertising contracts with the oil industry, with countries, with companies that have connections to the arms industry. And we have to realise that the world is not run by our democratic representatives. It is run by the arms industry, the oil industry, the pharmaceuticals industry. They have enormous markups and therefore have enormous amounts of money at their disposal to bribe people or to buy people off. That is the way the world is. And until we take those industries under control, we will always have these problems.
You used to be a grunt in the intelligence services. People like you have very good degrees and live in places like London and Oxford and the home counties, and you're married to people with good degrees, with good jobs. And you're talking about extreme corruption at the very top of the intelligence services. How is it that corruption spreads from the very top to people like you at the very bottom and allows the intelligence services to get away with the kind of real criminal behaviour that we're talking about tonight. Because, can I start the question, because when people like me do leave the service over issues like MI6 funding Al-Qaeda, I had the courage to resign and make my views very plainly known. And therefore they do not employ you anymore. I mean, I could resign, but I wasn't going to go anywhere.
You can walk into any kind of other job, surely. Person with qualifications like yourself.
No, you get blacklisted. I've got to be blacklisted for speaking out. I can't, you know, I'm just published anyway. I can't get a bloody job, basically. That's why I have to sell a book to survive. I am massively in debt as a result of what I've done, but I stick at it because it's important to the thing to do, basically. Yeah. And I couldn't. Away from that. You know, I did stop IRA terrorists, and I'm proud of that work, because those people put bombs down, and when you put bombs down, people die. And I'm proud of the fact that, as a result of my work, terrorists, real terrorists, were put behind bars. But when I saw the funding of terrorism by our agencies, I left and wanted no part of that, and I spoke out about it.
So they tell those people, you step out this line and your career, your life is over, yeah?
Well, I have also been subject to what I think was an attack by the intelligence services with intent to kill me. I was in a high-speed blowout in very peculiar circumstances. I've also heard from journalists that they were trying to blame me for the naming of State Knife, an IRA agent, which I had nothing to do with. But that, of course, would make me a target of loyalist agents. And this is the kind of thing they did to Pat Finucane in Northern Ireland, where they gave information to loyalists and then they bumped him off. As a matter of public record, we know the intelligence services kill people in this country from that inquiry. So why aren't the newspapers campaigning for reform of these corrupt people, basically?
David,
can
I just stop a minute? Just hold on.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So can I take 5 minutes more questions, then 5 minutes break, because my voice is going, I've got to go back and do this now again. Just while we're here, can I just tell people as well, we do have a book out. I have no apology for selling it, because it's a bloody good reading, and it's everything that you suspected is true, but worse, basically. Yeah. And this is a personal testimony of it, and it shows what happens when you try and stand up to these people, when you try and behave responsibly. It's the only way we survive, the way we pay our rent, is by selling this book, so I would urge people please to buy it. Special price today, £15, normally £17.95. So I'd be very grateful if you could do that and support us. And as a result of this, you could write to your local MP and the government and parliament and so on. So I'll just take a few more questions first.
Can you take a question from the people that were
there? Okay, Clothing.
Yeah, it's just state apparatus is so powerful. How come no weapons of mass destruction will find? You think it'd be the easiest thing to support their case?
Well, it won't any, will it?
I mean, plant them.
Why didn't they plant them?
If all of this that we look at today, that small fry plant.
It's a difficult question to ask. I don't know. I mean, that's what I did suspect when I saw that invasion, because obviously having worked in the service, I knew Iraq didn't have weapons of mass destruction. I tried to alert the government to that, but it would take a blind bit of notice as usual. But I did suspect that that would happen. It hasn't happened. I'm not quite sure why. I don't know.
I've got something I'd like to add to that, because actually, it's not only the US and Britain that have. And this is a good way of looking at movements of large missiles, etc., which are very easy to see from satellites. Other countries in the East are satellites, India satellites. So really, that area was not looked at closely, which is why they. Remember, somebody did try, but it was spotted by satellites, and I think it's something to do with the Gulf Stream or something. You know, they were riding a big ship down there, which could carry missiles, and then all of a sudden we didn't hear anything else about it.
Yeah, that would make an explanation that it was. Yeah, so if it was actually being surveyed by satellites, they couldn't do it physically. So you say you would think they would do it because it was the most obvious thing to do, wouldn't it? And the fact they didn't would suggest that they couldn't. There'd be no lack of will on their part to do it. General Howell.
We all saw the four photos of the so-called four bombers in London. Yeah, the guy from Brazil, they got shot by the police. There was no photos in jumping barriers and
He didn't jump the barrier.
This is another thing. If anybody doubts you have, they can put out propaganda, the press will swallow it. You've only got to look at the case of John's child, the Menendez.
Yeah.
It was appalling. Yeah, absolutely appalling. I mean, their arguments didn't make sense in the first place. They claimed this guy's a suicide bomb, then they let him get on a bus. Then there's all these reports. He left the barrier, he ran down the platform, he had to be tackled. It's all turned out to be a load of rubbish.
They did it on purpose.
And London Underground have actually said that they made the CCTV coverage available to police, and that has now gone missing. This is what they do again. They destroy evidence of their involvement in these things. And of course, straight away, they could have said, put out information saying this guy did not have a bomb. In fact, when the surveillance officer tackled him, put his arms around him, he would have known at that point that he did not have explosives strapped to him. So why did he let these people who appear not to be normal police, who appear to be special forces, who have a reputation for shoot to kill in Northern Ireland, what the hell are they doing being sent in to execute somebody? Now, I have heard theories this guy was electrician, and he worked on the London Underground. And that he may therefore have had inside information about what happened on 7/7. Again, I don't know if this is true or not, but I would say that if we're hearing that, we should be asking those questions. Because it does look to me like an execution. And these things used to happen in Northern Ireland. The mentality of the SAS was if we execute a few people, it'll put off the Catholics from becoming terrorists.
I understand.
Exactly the opposite works. They become, people are shot at that, become martyrs, and every young guy says, look, democracy's not working, we've got to take up arms to defend our community. That is how terrorism starts.
Yeah.
And the terrorism itself, of course, is a failure of democracy and diplomacy. As Nelson Mandela said, he had no democracy. He was being persecuted. What can he do to change his circumstances other than take up weapons and encourage other people to do so? Can I ask someone else a question? There's a question.
There's a lady down here.
Sorry,
I was just wondering why, what you think, if these things are inside jobs, what do you think the motivation might for them might be? Because I've heard some very good people talking about how oil supply is likely to peak, world oil supply is likely to peak this decade, which is going to have massive effects on the world economy and the
peaking
way
now.
Do you see that to be linked to Phil?
Yeah, obviously. People, for years, the oil industry has said peak oil, it's a myth of conspiracy theorists and activists. The chairman of Amoco recently set off a committee to look very seriously at the issue of peak oil. The oil industry is scared by this, and that's why they want control of the oil industry in Iraq, in Libya. This is why they want their gas pipelines being safe that go through Afghanistan. Oil is at the heart of it. There are many barbaric regimes in the world, but America takes no interest in them if they don't have oil, basically. It's as simple as that. Can I take just one more question?
No, I was just going to lead on and say, like, you know, but you sort of semi-answered it with, like, do you think they're trying to lead us into a police state? I mean, because I understand about everything to do with the oil and stuff like that, but I mean, there seems to be so much going on here as well, and, you know, in the countries where we're not people who have the oil, you know what I mean? We're not, but there seems to be civil liberties being taken away.
We see our traditional liberties being compromised everywhere. This country has an appalling record on civil liberties. As soon as they created terrorist conflict, as they did in Northern Ireland, they then passed laws that people will accept because they are scared and so on.
Yeah.
And yet none of these laws actually stop terrorism. The reason that we now have peace in Northern Ireland is because people sat around a table and negotiated. We will not ever, through violence, stop terrorism, through invasions and wars. And the agenda of this has to be to try and control the citizens, because they realise that we now have things like the internet at our disposal. We can talk to each other, we can share information in a way that wasn't possible 10, 20 years ago. So I believe the agenda behind all of this is the police state, is to control us, to make us dutiful citizens who don't spend our money off big corporations and don't question what is going on. And therefore I say to us all of you now,
Stand up, please, now, let's do it. It's no time to sit around, like in the Monty Python's Life of Brian, have a good discussion about the Brian's being abducted by the Romans, you know? Let's do it now, because in 4 years' time, there may be no opportunity to do it. It may already be in place.